This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan MacLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm in Sandton today to talk to the founder of online radio station Touch HD, Thabo Malefe, better known, of course, as Thibo Touch. Thibo was, of course, one of the leading voices behind the Data Must Fall campaign, which got many South African mobile telecoms executives rather hot under the collar. Thibo, it's a pleasure to have you on Tech Central, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Duncan, for making the time.
Let's start by looking back at your life. You were born in Sharpeville in 1981.
Yep.
And raised by your grandparents.
Yep.
The entrepreneurial bug bit you quite early on in life when you founded the Entrepreneurs Club in high school. You then moved at quite a young age, 16 or 17, I think, to the US.
Yes.
Why?
I'm glad you've done some good research. I was privileged to be from a family that already had produced a dynamic activist. So there was already a link to be in the US at that time, having family members on exile. It was a transition to say South Africa. I felt like at that time I reached my climax. And it's a funny story, but I never did well in Afrikaans. And I remember these career guidance tutors came to our school from Wits, and they said, "We're not going to accept you because you need to pass English and Afrikaans to get into the student and to the institution." And I was at grade 10 at that time. So it dawned on me that I've been failing this subject for so many years. I won't make it into varsity. It's a big deal when you come from my home to be searched on the papers and there's distinctions on your name. Because, you know, in our family, we've got, you know, uncles who are doctors. My grandfather is a doctor. So I couldn't be the prodigal son. And I was clear that I'm not going to make the newspapers come matric. So the best way to get an exemption for me is to take off and go, you know, search for greener pastures across the Atlantic.
Right, right. It's a young age to pick yourself up and go off to another country, right?
It's, I've always had the energy to, you know, explore. I move into territories that are untapped and not safe, and you gotta do things that scare you. At that age, I look back and I say, "Man, I was young." Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say I was young because I had no other choice. I looked at my situations and circumstances at the time, 96. It was not normal for a black young man to dream to have his own media house. It wasn't. You know, you look at how we evolve in society, our circumstance sometimes limit our dreams. Mm-hmm. And I've been a big dreamer. 2 years in democracy was not a guarantee that 2018 I'll be having this conversation with you.
Mm. So you went to the US at a young age. What did you have anything in mind? Did you know what you wanted to do when you got there?
I was clear that I, you know, need to make sure that I don't leave the very same door that was open for me closed. I arrived at a young age with the strength of my father's legacy and my grandfather's relations, where we are close with the family called the Joneses family. At that time, the father to Grace Jones actually adopted me to be his son. And may God, you know, bless his soul in his absence, Bishop Robert Winston Jones, who's the father to Grace. And I lived in the same house where Grace, Noel, and other kids were raised in Syracuse. At that time, I attended high school. I was a good soccer player, so I was clear I was going to get a scholarship. But then I picked a heart murmur in 98.
You got a heart murmur?
Yes. I was diagnosed with a heart murmur at that time, first time I knew it. And they scanned my heart, and there was this big hole in my heart. And the doctor said, if I do anything physical, I run, I continue with sports, I won't get in. And I had acceptance at that time from SU, Syracuse University. And when that letter came through, I was just demoralized. So I remembered that I can play golf. but I'm not going to get a golf scholarship. This is the U.S. I mean, you got the majority of the champions in PGA coming from the States, so it's more competitive.
Yeah.
Soccer was an easy escape goat. So I had to realize I'm not going to get the athletic route. And that's when the business, the robust approach to be business-minded came in. I was doing some stuff before I left. I ran my own bakery in school. I had my tech shop in school. It wasn't normal for kids to have those kind of setups. But I became more aggressive when I realized that I don't, you know, if my health fails me, my business qualities is all I have, and I'm gonna make sure I use every moment to make it work. Actually, I've never spoke about my health side. It's the first time I probably people find out that I've had a heart condition, but I've been living with it for so many years, and I think that's what drives me the most.
It's manageable. It's not. It's not gonna. It's not something that's gonna knock you down the next day. It's
It's
managed through medication. Is it?
True, but it's, you know, if you physically very excessive, it can be a problem.
Okay.
Because I need to limit the type of physical activities I engage in, and I was told at that time there's certain things I cannot do. I've been working out. I'm in good health. If I let it affect me, then I don't think I'll be here today.
Mm-hmm.
But the doctor told me that this hole keeps growing in my heart, and they were showing me the rate in which it's growing. And I was 17, so he said at 30, it would have grown so bad that I probably would have to look in alternative means. I never wanted to know what those alternative means are. I'm 37 today, and I'm still here.
So it must have been a hell of an experience going across to the U.S.
Definitely.
You were adopted by Bishop Robert and Marjorie Jones.
Correct.
You completed your schooling in the U.S.
Correct.
And then in 2001, you moved to the Big Apple, New York City.
Yep.
And stayed with Grace Jones.
Grace was quite influential
mm-hmm.
in my life, that the whole pursuit in entertainment business, where I interned at that time, the first urban record company that paved the way for a lot of the bigger names today. You name the Jay-Z's, the Beyoncé's. Def Jam was a hub that gave birth and propelled urban culture into a multi-million, hundreds of million business. And I was there as an intern on an F-1 visa.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get permanent employment, so I just came in as that underdog, and I grew within that structure. And all of that was just, you know, the whole juxtaposition of being around people like Grace. Also, me coming from a background where I threw parties in high school using my church equipment, and I was just that kind of kid who knew
mm-hmm.
that entertainment industry is going to be my playfield.
You've always been very religious, have you?
I don't think I've ever been religious, because the last time I was in church, it's probably 9 months ago. But that's religion. But I'm spiritual.
All right.
I'm very spiritual in the sense that I cannot move into or leap into anything if it doesn't sit and rest well. I pray with every move I make, you know, and it's just the way I was raised, and it's all I know.
You were involved in religious work when you were in New York, right?
Big time.
An organization called Youth with Destiny.
Big time, yes. We even brought a couple of young people here from NYU at that time. There was an international exchange program I was involved in, and we came to Bond University. Funny enough, it was up the road where Vazity College is. That used to be Bond University. So I was an international student there, and out of YWD, Youth with Destiny, we brought some young people to come and do some skills exchange program. And at that time, my dream was to find like-minded people who can best exchange networks with those who were in the marketing field, advertising and communication, and that to drive that you know, initiative. I wasn't just a member, I was actually the chairperson at some point. It was a great move for me.
Mm-hmm. So your career in showbiz started to take off. You joined an organization called Def Jam Records.
Yes.
As an intern, as you mentioned. What did that involve? What did your work involve there?
So there was thing called Street Team at the time. What a Street Team does, when an artist releases their project, we will be the one who are responsible for merchandising. Mm-hmm. Every club, every store, every food locker, which is a sneaker shoe store, every event publicly will do activations. We used to have backpacks. These backpacks will carry the single, at your CD mm-hmm. at that time.
Okay. You know,
after cassettes. So we'll have about 100 backpacks. And I led a team of 5 people who were in the whole Manhattan with these backpacks. So we had to distribute 500 CDs a day. So when a big act is releasing their album, we'll do what you call ground activation. We are on the subway giving people all these free singles just to make that awareness. And we were handling grassroots, what I call street penetration. And I grew from that to strategic marketing, where we now got involved with doing tours in universities, doing tours in certain places that hip-hop was not penetrating at that time. Because I'm talking 90, it was early, man, when you wouldn't hear. I think the first time hip-hop started penetrating a lot of your Ivy League institutions was through the likes of Eminem working with Dr. Dre, and the white community started accepting hip-hop more aggressive. The Beastie Boys did it, and you know, mm-hmm. other groups, but I think it became more contemporary and acceptable in those circles when through the release of Eminem, and I think that was a revolutionary moment in hip-hop.
Mm-hmm. So while you were there, you convinced the SABC, Metro FM specifically, to launch a satellite studio in New York. How did that come about? What happened exactly?
I was working for Metro from 2003. Telephonic correspondence, calling in. And one time, I couldn't pay my phone bill. Uh-huh. And my segment will come and they couldn't reach me. And it became tough for me to sustain it because the demand for it was so high. I remember I had an interview on a two-way conference with Akon, where I'll call Akon and then I'll call the studio to South Africa and we have a two-way and I'm interviewing him over the phone. I'm in New York, I was in Atlanta, and the guy's in Joburg. And it felt like, is there an alternative way we can try this? We tried it on Skype then, but the facilities didn't work. So I said, listen, I can get studios here, but they're going to cost us. So at that time, I wasn't under a contract, and the rules and policy with SABC is you can't pay a freelancer that is not contracted.
Right.
So I had to get a contract. And 2004, April, I won't forget, it was my birthday, we went live for the first time where we got studios under the leadership of Mr. Leslie Ntloko. We set up studios, and Peter McClary at that time was like, who's this? guy corresponding that we're paying so much for to buy this, to get these studios. And we went live, and it was legendary.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of it, you know, the ISDNs back then, it was just like, where is this guy? And he's sitting in this booth on 54th Street and 6th Avenue, and he's coming live from New York. Who's this person? So I think we broke the inaccessibility of some of the artists then, because I interviewed everybody, Snoop Dogg, T.I. I had people now being more accessible before social media. They will come in studio every Saturday. We'll have some big name doing an interview with us.
So, is that when you became a household name in South Africa?
Am I a household name now?
Yeah, you are for sure.
Duncan, I've always put out an opportunity that I had. When I was at Def Jam, I worked like that's my last job. When I was at Metro, I did what I had to do, something that whoever's coming after me will have a hard challenge. I look back and sometimes I laugh to say, you know, I had the likes of Mayweather walking through those studios. Nothing was ever coordinated by the SABC. This is me coordinating.
Yeah.
I had John Legend walking through those studios. I had Jesse Jackson walking through those studios. I've had some moments. I've had some great moments of my journey, man. I can mention names, athletes, people. And you only see this when you're done. Like, how did we do it? And you remember the stress of sometimes being in the afternoon show and traffic, and they stuck in traffic, and you gotta call for favors. You're like, man, you can't do it over the phone. And I felt like,
what's the best interview you ever did when you were there? What the most interesting person you met?
Ladysmith Black Mambazo, for me, was the best interview I've ever had because it was their first time ever interviewed on Metro FM. And I literally interviewed Bab Shabalala. He was still
in New York.
In the group. Here in South Africa. Okay. He was in the group and they had just flown in from winning a Grammy. Mm-hmm. And I took a chance to call them. And they said, we actually in Joburg at the airport, we're waiting on our flight to connect to Durban. I said, I'll pay you guys to sleep over, if you don't mind. Stay another night so that I can have this moment with you. And they came the following day and they said, this is the first time. And that day was the first time their music was played ever on Metro FM.
So you started a company called Trademark,
correct,
which I think organized concerts. You then arranged the first ever concert for John Legend,
correct,
in South Africa. And then you brought in a whole lot of other international artists. All the while, you were growing your radio career through Metro, and you also started hosting shows on the SABC's TV channels. When did you come back to South Africa?
2005. Can't remember how old I was, but it was around 05. And everything I built between 2005 and 2015 at SABC was all done in 10 years.
How old are you now?
I'm 37 now. It was challenging when you do all these amazing work and on Saturday you read Sunday Times and the credit is going to the company that will always object your thoughts and your ideas. I mean, there are some remarkable stuff that one will do and you get in trouble for it. I get in trouble for bringing Floyd Mayweather into studio because I was supposed to follow protocol and make sure the CEO is there to welcome him. The CEO is there. And I was just bringing a guest in studio. But the credit will go, to the broadcaster. I took the station in 2013 for almost 6 months in New York. I was paying... At that time, every day on drive, I was paying $140 a day to go live from New York. And I will do that next minute. You read all the great work. The credit will go to the station. But paying for the studio time, paying for the producer. I remember earning a fraction of my salary and twice what I earned went into the cost of producing the show, and that is passion. Today, if you need to hire a DJ and you offer them, let's say, 20,000 rands, but they put 40,000 in the craft, they will come to you and say, I can't do it, it doesn't make business sense. So if I look back, the investment that I did with the years I had at Metro, it was not what I'm getting, it's what I'm putting into the craft. So when I leave, I'm qualified to, start my own platform. I'm qualified to coach those who want to start their platform. And that for me, I look back, it makes sense now why it didn't make sense in the bank. But it made sense from a point of legacy.
So let's talk about Touch HD. You left the SABC to form this, did you?
I left the SABC and I was privileged to meet Gareth Cliff at Carolyn Stain's birthday party. And we were just playing with the idea of saying, man, you are a rebel. You left 5FM. And you've done this for a year or two.
With Cliff
How
Central.
Is it going? And at that time, it was on Cliff Central. It's like, man, it's going well. And I said, listen, I respected the tenacity to say, I'm leaving a team to start my own soccer team. And let's do something together. It's like, yeah, let's give it a shot. And I respect Gareth for that. I always respect him. For being brave to try something new, but we had fun in a very short space of time, I can tell you that. And the opportunity presented itself to branch out, and I said, let me take the knowledge and experience and start something that is going to talk to that kid in Dantane, Kwamashu, Umlazi. Let me do more without diluting the Cliff Central brand. Let me do more and give the typical Metro's YFM run for their money. You know, as a partnership, Touch Central, we wouldn't do justice to that, because when I look at Gareth's model, it works very well with the likes of your 702s. And I'm coming in with this very contemporary energy. And I said, listen, I'm going to go and give the likes of your YFM and Metro reasons why they becoming irrelevant in society. And that was purely the birth of Touch HD. And then you start realizing that actually there's a bigger battle. Until data is considered as a human right in this country, anybody who's innovative is going to fail, because the world lives online today. The world, networking, we are all creators in this space or in this cloud. And to move information from one person to the next, it has to be through the internet. It's got to get to a point where the government of today prioritizes the significance of cost of data the same way they prioritize the significance of electricity and water. Mm-hmm. It's a basic need.
So did the Data Must Fall, you launched the Data Must Fall movement. Was it a direct result of your frustration about the high cost of data and 100%. Distributing your radio platform on the internet?
I'm here excited with talent. Yeah. I made Metro, my show alone, I think at that time was making over 200 and something million a year. And that station was making about 400 million as a whole. Mm. So I was bringing 50% of the profit without a doubt. When I got suspended on off air, I would get calls from brands directly, and it would become a crisis. So yeah. I was very clear that I'm bringing numbers. Now, when I migrated in the space that I moved into, I said, the only challenge is barrier to entry. You cannot question skill and talent. Barrier to entry. Because if you're going to question skill and talent, we got legends like Tim Modise on this platform.
Yeah.
So do not go that direction. So then I realized the frustration cannot just be an issue of meeting with the ministers of communications. At that time, Faith Mtambi was sitting with a document with ICASA. They had their internal issues. I said, listen, networks are obligated to support SMMEs. It's part of their budget to support merging content creators, and it wouldn't do no harm to engage them. So we started with request for engagement, and nobody came back to us. When I went public, Data Must Fall, at that time I said, Gareth, this thing needs to go viral. We went viral. The portfolio committee of parliament called us in to present our argument. There was a lot of research that went into it, paid some lawyers. It was an expensive exercise, and we had to go to Cape Town and present in parliament. So research had to be done, because you had the networks who were going to crush you. So the networks brought their best experts to parliament as well.
Very well financed.
Oh, hello.
Expensive lawyers, of course.
They were there with their lawyers and their suits, listening to these two young boys who are opportunists.
Was Gareth there as well?
Gareth was there. Mm-hmm. I said he has to come. Mm-hmm. So we sat there, presented our case, and it was their turn to explain the exorbitant cost. And the truth of the matter is they pointed fingers at the regulator. And the regulator was also there. I remember the CEO of the ICASA was also in that room. Mm-hmm. Then I started realizing there's a problem here. The regulator is not doing his job, or the regulator and the network have unfinished business. That's not for me to investigate. What's for me is to ensure that a Tibo Touch who's merging with his own online channel is not going to fail. So luckily, I had the resources to take the battle on, and we still could not get any response from the network. At some point...
So you didn't have any engagements up to this point with any of the networks?
None whatsoever. A couple of weeks, we then made an announcement we are going to march to MTN offices. And the call came in from the CEO to ask for a meeting.
Right.
When that call came in, they asked, what would you like us to do? Mm-hmm. And I said, I run a business that employs at that time 42 people, facing failure in a field where I know I'm one of the best. I did radio and I was not average. I did radio and I left the Kimberley hole when I left Metro FM. So you cannot tell me that my business has to fail simply because people are not tuning in. They're not tuning in because it's expensive for them to tune in. And they said, okay, what's your first point of departure? I said, zero rate our platform. Make it free. so that you don't charge the customer. And by the time the meeting, you know, we were in a meeting, they had sat with us and gave us a lecture with why the costs are so expensive. They brought these numbers down. They showed us the figures and how much they're doing for the community, where they're sending the money, the CSR projects. I said, I'm not interested in any of those. You make my platform free. I have a business to run. I have two kids that I'm raising. I'm bringing 42 people to work every day who are breadwinners in their circle. There is no way this business is going to fail. When you have the means to make Twitter free, you can make WhatsApp free. And you've never met Mark Zuckerberg. Here's Touch, a product of your own. I'm your customer. You cannot give me a reason why you're not supporting me. And we're zero rated.
By MTN.
By MTN. I went public. I said, we are winning this battle. But then I realized people are saying, you sold out.
You won the battle for your business, but yes. I think it had become much more than just about Touch HD. It had become you'd created this campaign which resonated with so many South Africans that it had become about something much bigger, right? So when you got the zero rating, everyone thought, well, that's great, but the bigger issue hasn't been dealt with.
100%. We got the zero rating. We then had a meeting with the chairperson of ICASA at that time, Mr. Ruben
Mohlaloha.
Yes, yes. And we said, look, at the end of the day, networks take instructions from you. Zero rating Touch HD does not mean it's cheaper for me to make a WhatsApp call. Doesn't mean that it's cheaper for me to upload or search for jobs online. The majority of our people are still struggling. They have Android phones, but they cannot use them to its full capacity. How do we best approach this issue of data? I was given a political lecture and told that at a certain time when the digital migration commences, there's going to be a big price cut. Okay, when is this? It was scheduled last year, March, at that time. But the communication department kept on being reshuffled, like Ayanda came in. So we are observing. I said, no, this is nonsense. In June last year, we came back aggressive. And I said to ICASA, data must fall doesn't mean network must close. We are not coming for you. You are a public entity. You have to disclose your management accounts. You have to disclose information to the public regarding the progress with the decline of data cost. And I think that poked the organization hard.
ICASA.
And one of the arguments was, where do we start? We can't just drop data Touch. Where do we start? I said, there's an issue around data bundles depleting, which is a big issue because you don't get notification. Secondly, if I'm buying data, the transaction is done, I've paid you for it, whether I use it 6 months from now, that's my prerogative. You can't dictate on how I need to quickly use it because if you understand the rules of consumption, you're selling something, I buy it. If I use it 2 weeks later, it's mine.
So ICASA came up with these regulations which are published recently. What did you think of them?
That engagement happened last year.
Yeah.
That engagement happened last year. They only implemented it, realizing that the pressure is mounting so high that you need to report back to the public on what is happening with the call of data must fall, because we had over 80 million signed petitions. 80.
Good grief.
We are going
to
set
more than there are people in South Africa.
80 million signed.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan was to say, look, we need to use the power of digital to help us mobilize this message. We are not going to be marching and blocking roads and vandalizing properties, but if it gets to a point where we are not listened to or we are not heard, you're leaving it to irretrievable approaches.
Did you meet with any of the other operators? Was it just MTN?
We had a meeting with Vodacom in March of last year. I'll try to recall.
Did they also zero rate you?
No. Our conversation with Vodacom, we didn't ask them to zero rate the platform. We're talking around issues of how can they best... Oh, yeah, it was 2016 or 2017. So Vodacom, we went to... with suggestions of certain websites at that time. That's when the Wits University also announced some zero-rated platforms that they have for their students. So say, listen, take us through the types of costs. If you can zero rate your video content platforms, and if you understand, a 4K video, if you watch it for an hour, it takes 1.5 gig, right? Mm-hmm. And they have such good content on their platform. And I say, if you can zero rate their platform, I'm sure there are some lectures that you can make free for institutions. There are some platforms, online bookstores that can be made available, online lectures that can be made free, and you guys will have won the market. Said, and then they showed that, yeah, we already have some platforms that we have zero rated for Job Find, but these things speak to post grads.
Yeah, they did. I remember they announced something for university students. Was that as a result of your meeting with them?
I wouldn't give that credit to us, but we brought all of those on the table at that time.
Yeah.
And the team was quite innovative. They were proposing that, you know, we should look into partnerships with our content and them. That kept on going back and forth. But the engagement with Network will not, for us, be amount to the victory we expect if ICASA, at the end of the day, does not regulate the issue of costs. Because networks will always compete with best deals, but the best deals are still in the ceiling, are those that are still high up there. If one says we are offering you, you know, 2 gigs a month, if you sign up for this, that goes to issue of credit. And we are living in an unbankable society. So all these nice data deals that are happening benefits the few who are on contract, but the majority wouldn't work. So I learned a lot with those engagements. Vodacom and MTN gave me a true lecture of how their business operates. And I kind of understood that there are opportunities for a lot of SMMEs in the online space to partner with the networks. But the overall giant in the room here, the Goliath here, is ICASA. And that's where we need to focus our energies.
Is it ICASA or is it the policymaker government that needs to create the policy environment to ensure there's sufficient competition to drive down prices?
It's ICASA because they can make recommendations to the policymakers.
Okay.
Because the policymakers don't understand the intricacies of what goes in cost structures. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to put a group of people who their job is to solely regulate a certain space, they should make recommendations to say, look, this is what's happening on the market. It's not going to hurt the network. It won't even hurt us. But we are losing the battle here.
Yeah. And I suppose the problem is that ICASA and the minister responsible, Siyabonga Kwele, at DTPS, they're suing, the minister is suing ICASA because they don't agree about how the market should be opened up to competition from a spectrum perspective. And that's right, an untenable situation, right? These two organizations need to be working together if we're going to see a reduction in prices and an increase in competition in this country.
That's saying that a particular sardine is being sued by a shark when it should take all the wisdom, take all the learning from the institution and the support, monetarily so, and I think skills as well. So I don't understand how they are, because to me they are inextricably tied up. You can't separate the two. Hence I'm saying they can send recommendations to the organization. Mm-hmm. But the bigger picture here is ANC has a big challenge with the elections next year. People don't go out and vote. If we had mastered the digital space to to afford those who can't access your voting polls to be able to vote online, and you build these mechanics, you build these systems where we function electronically, you will have a home run to win your elections because you are in power.
I've often wondered whether there's a platform for a new political party to be launched in this country that's an issues-based party that focuses on ICT, focuses on the cost of data and related issues.
I think that party will be a big opposition if it was ever to be there. But I don't think anybody who is in that innovative space wants the headache of having a political party because now you are now too much in the public and it's an unnecessary headache.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is they're going to have a big challenge if they are the governing party right now and they don't see the need to respond to this growing innovation. Young people today don't need jobs in post offices.
Mm-hmm.
Young people are creating their own platforms, and to export that gift, they need to have access to a digital hub. So that level of despondency is raising amongst the youth. They feel that the government don't understand them. They are too inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
They are far in terms of relevancy. You have a what you call a new dawn, but it hasn't translated in the skill side and relevancy. It hasn't materialized in understanding the majority of the population where they are. It's nice to label something, but it's a challenge if it cannot be executed to its maximum expectations.
So before we started talking today, you told me that Data Must Fall is not dead.
Not at all.
What is the current status of it where is it going?
Not at all. I've met with DJs Boo, who runs his network called Massive Metro, and other guys who have built their online platform. And I said, guys, let's not make this a Tibor Touch battle.
Mm-hmm.
You have all now ventured into this space. Let's, as a collective, mobilize ourselves to say we're going to give it a bigger shot, because one shot is not effective as all of us coming together. And the conversation around that was, we're going to give it another shot to approach the regulators, but I don't think this approach is going to be in a boardroom.
Mm.
South Africans are tired of dangling the carrots. I don't want to make any announcements unless there's a plan of action behind them. I don't want to make any promise because I'm not the locksmith to reducing the price of data, but I believe that I'm instrumental in leading that change. Hence, the people I've mobilized are joining forces with me to say, we are going to fight this battle the same way we fought apartheid.
So, more to come soon.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
It has to.
In the streets.
It has to, Duncan. We're not winning this for ourselves. I'm winning this for that 12-year-old, brilliant, innovative kid who needs to put his business or needs to put his idea to the world. But he can't communicate that via SMS. They are online. They are studying. All big platforms are online. There's no bigger channel than YouTube. There's no bigger bank. There's no bigger hotel than Airbnb.
As you alluded to earlier, it's the internet forms the foundation of the modern economy.
Hello. Look what Uber did. How many Toyotas have been sold? People are looking at the online side, the digital side. They don't understand in its whole economic chain, you have more jobs being created at Toyota because there's a high demand to get the Uber Access car, which have been, you've seen a lot of them at Toyota Camrys. There has been increase with spendings because of the fuel consumption. So it's not just Uber. People are seeing Uber here. It's you gotta do entire dissect, look into the whole entire economic chain and see who is benefiting in the bigger scheme of things. The same way with an online station. Touch HD is contributing to the sales of airtimes and datas because people need those bundles to listen to the platform. So by us creating content, we are contributing immensely in the telecom space. And if we're not going to be treated or there's no form of reciprocity,
mm-hmm.
we will revitalize the same energy that took us out of apartheid to fight this battle.
So what should be done? You mean you say ICASA needs to intervene. What do they need to do?
There's no formula to a revolution. I can't give it to you and say 1 + 1 = 2. But I can tell you that the revolution will be digitized. We are on the edge of mobilizing let me put it in the right way. The approach is going to be robust. Mm-hmm. You know South Africans, when they get to a point where, excuse my French, when their heart fall, they show you.
I think that's Afrikaans, not French.
When it gets to that point, you can't have a template of how you're going to express yourselves. But I purely think it's purely an undermining exercise and taking people for granted. Mm-hmm. Because if these providers were not cheaper in other African territories, we'll understand. But the fact that they are way reasonably cheaper and their headquarters are here in our backyard, it's a middle finger to your face. I'm a patriot, and if I'm producing any product to the world, if petrol is expensive in the AU, if people in Dubai pay more for oil than other regions,
yeah,
and you produce that, come on, put the math together.
I'm a bit curious about this, though, because you look at Telkom, for example, and they seem to have some pretty good deals on those free me packages. You know, they significantly undercut the rival operators.
Yeah.
Why are South Africans not moving to them en masse? Why do they stay with the
Good
most
question.
Expensive providers?
Good question. I'm a Philip Kotler student, and I've always believed that sometimes good products are underrated, not because they don't speak to our core values, but if you do not master the way of communicating to a specific segment or specific market, you are going to end up with a good product that's going to end up in the wrong hands or be underrated simply because it's not appealing or it's not ticking the touch points of what makes it an aspirational brand.
So it's more than just pricing?
It's more than just pricing. I think the marketing manager at Telkom must come see me for 2 weeks. I'll give them a good 101 and marketing 101 exercise, because with the budgets they have, they still look like a peristatal network.
Yeah.
And young people don't respond well to such brands that are not
cool,
contemporary. Mm-hmm. The likes of your Vodacoms and MTN, you know, they're heavy with the music space.
Yeah.
They always look for what's new, what's the next trend, and they associate with such.
Yeah.
We just came back from the Vodacom Dem in July. What does Telkom have?
Vodacom was all over it.
Yeah. We'll help them.
But do you think consumers are also perhaps a bit to blame in that they don't shop around?
We can say the consumers don't shop around, but the truth of the matter is the consumer is king.
Yeah.
In an economy, the consumer is king. And you got to make yourself more accessible to the consumer who is ignorant about the product. Mm. iPhone is probably the most expensive phone. My nanny, I don't even think she earns the price of an iPhone, but uses it. And I ask myself, why did she buy such an expensive phone? Because when they meet in their stock fells with those other mamas, mm-hmm. and they all put up on their, they put Nokia on the table and she puts an iPhone, she's the ringleader. Why? Because her boss comes to work and boss's friends also come to work or come to the house and they all put their iPhones there and he says, Mama, have I paid you? No, let me get on my phone now. Boom, boom, boom. It's gone. She goes back in the villages. She has an iPhone. Quality of the videos, And Steve Jobs didn't have to come and market this to us. He just made it very
aspirational,
valuable for people who seek to aspire but cannot afford. It's the same way we tie ourselves into expensive car installments.
Mm.
And I'm sure half the people, you know, that drive the most expensive cars have low financial IQ. I don't exclude myself from it. But it means a lot in society when you acquire certain products as a sign of affluence or aspiration.
Yeah.
So I can only speak for what I know. I've built a brand without a marketing budget.
Yeah.
And it's disruptive. So maybe telecom needs to come to us, as I said, and we'll teach them and we'll help them.
So as we move towards the end of the discussion today,
yes.
I understand you've got some interesting developments happening here at Touch HD.
Indeed.
You've got some plans around online video, which sounds really exciting. Tell me more about that.
People are, when you spoke about the brilliancy of South African customers, it's painful that we have international brands that come in, compete with the local ones, and they offer much cheaper services. When you look at the war between Netflix and DSTV, Netflix is winning because of the price point. DSTV has compelling content. People don't understand some of the content on DSTV. It's actually pay-per-view in other territories. You know, stuff like your the Mayweather fights, you have to pay to watch that, and you get it here as part of your package.
Yeah.
Some of the series get 24 hours late. And I, if I was one of the management at DSTV, I'll feel the pain because it's expensive to acquire that content, and it's also very relevant. It's stuff that plays worldwide. We're not getting some 10 years ago footage. However, you cannot do much. It's like the same war between taxi drivers and Uber.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix came on. It's giving compelling content as well at a very affordable price.
In a tough economy where people are sensitive to price.
We are very sensitive to price because times are extremely hard right now. So the winner in the room right now is the one who's able to bring affordable platforms that gives you access to quality content. And we realize that we need to be able to create our own stories, not have Hollywood come to Africa and write our stories. I feel that that era has arrived. I've met with a numerous amount of content creators. We've increased our workmanship here with hiring 18 new videographers,
wow,
directors, with the partnership with IDC. I went and said to the committee and said, we need a couple of millions. And they pumped some good money into the business to accommodate our innovative plans for the next 24 months. So we're launching a partnership similar to your likes of Netflix. I'm making my way to LA to say, this is our content that we created ourselves. There's so much great stories in the continent that don't make mainstream TV. And I'm excited that we are going to cover your stories from suspense to spirituality created by Africans for the world on 4K quality. And that's what we are offering the world. It's exciting. I'm getting stuff from Nairobi, Nigeria, our partners, Temple, the Temple Management Group, which is one of the largest entertainment group in Africa. We represent them here in South Africa. We've already mobilized a lot of content that is going to be the best depiction of who we are. We don't want to continue the stigma of perpetuating Africans as third world people who are looking for aid, and we cannot produce 100 million blockbuster content. Black Panther, the biggest selling Marvel content, the story is based on Africa.
Yeah.
There are prominent South African actors in that movie. So that shows you there's a demand for strong African content, but it's got to be told well. And until we do it right, let's not get it done, because the world will respect the level of quality, the amount of craftsmanship that goes into it. And that's what we've done. We have invested in some heavy cinematography equipment that is going to show our stories in a way that somebody sitting in Russia will appreciate how we cut our product. Somebody sitting in the US will appreciate the type of DOPs and the angles that we decide to tell our stories. So I'm excited. That's the direction that we're taking. And
so is this being launched under the Touch HD?
This is done. This is done. We're launching under the Touch HD group. Mm-hmm. And yesterday
has
I
it got
ran
a name?
A poll. You about to get it first. So yesterday I went on Twitter and I ran a poll and said, we're about to launch our channel.
Yeah.
Can somebody please come up with a name? I didn't know it was going to blow up so big. We had over 2,800 engagements.
I saw you tweet that, yeah.
And you know, somebody had won that competition. So THD is the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to keep it within the Touch HD brand that we've built and not to reinvent the wheel.
THD.
So the new channel is THD and is going live. We'll be happy to announce that this spring is not just going to be, you know, a new change of climate, but we are springing with some innovative platforms that's going to revolutionize TV.
What's the distribution platform? Are you using YouTube or another platform?
So same way you access your Netflix, that's exactly how you're going to get this platform. Like I said, we've partnered with the guys in California.
So your own apps, your own
100%.
Website, which will have live streaming on the web and all that sort of thing.
100%.
Okay.
Built by a group of credible developers to make sure that we, again, are not creating a product that people must consume out of pity. I don't put our product and say, support black. No, I put a product and I want a Jewish guy to support me. I want the black person to support me. Your pocket has no color. Mm. You support black from a point of heritage, from a point of legacy. But my product must be able to match anybody on the market and say, this is a quality product.
So who would you say is going to be your nearest rival in South Africa? Are you, I mean, there's so many guys, getting into the space now, you've got, of course, MultiChoice, which is the big gorilla in the room.
Yeah.
Netflix is here. Amazon is here. We've got Celsius Black.
Yeah.
And there are lots of smaller guys out there also looking to get into the space. Where are you positioned in the market? Who's your audience going to be? Maybe talk a bit about that.
We got some amazing stuff, content already that most producers who didn't make mainstream, they've afforded us. Signed a great deal with one of the leading producers in Nigeria, who's giving us some great content. I don't see why DSTV is not my direct competitor, because of the abundance of choice we are offering on this platform and also the quality of it that we're going to put out there. We've set up a criteria. I think I'll be communicating to the rest of producers what type of videos we're going to be taking. But for me, to fight Netflix is trivial. You can't fight Netflix.
Yeah.
So what you do, you get thrilled at what they've put out there and beat them. Competition is amazing. You got to, it has to turn you on. If somebody if somebody has a better radio platform out there, I must be excited. Mm-hmm. Say the radio industry is growing. So to say you want to fight Netflix is going against the principles of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Nobody fought DSTV when they were starting. Or if they did, they probably failed. But you shouldn't. I don't believe in killing competition. You must keep competition alive to remind you how good you are. And that's what we're there for.
So you're going to have a whole lot of content on this platform. So a lot of it you're going to be producing yourselves. Are you also buying international content to put on the platform?
100%. We've already bought some international content that...
You mentioned Nigeria. Are you going to put the usual mix of Hollywood movies and
we
series?
Have to.
And,
we yeah. have to. We have to. We, we've got some great content from very famous documentaries of famous people who never agreed to do docus around them.
Mm.
I'm doing a storyline right now around Floyd Mayweather and other names. We want to give people other sides of certain icons that people didn't know. We want to cover stories differently from how everybody has always portrayed other people. So there's going to be documentaries, short films, movies. We got this big movie that we're working on this October. or possibly released early next year. And it's stories around things that are happening in our communities. And there is no better time to be excited and to be alive than now, where you are able to say we can finally script what we go through without wearing a commercial hat to make it appeal to the Western market. Because if you put out a great product like Love is a what was that movie that grossed 40 million? It's a South African movie. Love is a four-letter word. South African movie. Grossed 40 bars. You know, that for me, more money than Jurassic Park. It was a great experience to see our stories getting that type of respect from our audiences. So this is really an exciting venture for me because we did our research with what the audience and the market wants.
When does it launch?
We're launching first week of October, commercial-free platform.
Commercial-free. And how much will it cost, have you announced yet?
Very deep. If you go across the roads, they'll tell you at IDC a minimum of 100 million to build something like this. It's not cheap. It's not cheap at all.
I mean, how much are you going to be charging customers?
That's the key part.
Yeah.
You will think we're doing this not to even be in business. It's going to be the most... You take all the existing platforms, none of them will match us with price.
You'll be cheaper.
Because we don't have brokers with the producers. Mm-hmm. We are creating content and we are talking directly with the producers. So there's no agency aggregating that space. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is the revenue model works for everybody. Everybody makes money from demand. Mm-hmm. It's pay-per-click. You can't beat that model.
4K content as well. So this isn't just going to be aimed at smartphones. It's going to be aimed at people in their lounge watching on a 4K TV.
Yes. We had to. Mm-hmm. Hence the type of equipment we invested in. We could not just get your ordinary HD cameras because that's moving. 4K quality is, you know, you can, the beauty about the type of equipment we have, we can shoot in a format to reduce the resolution. You can shoot in 2K.
Yeah.
You can shoot in HD. But the reason why 4K is I need you to enjoy it in your 100 inch screen. I want you to enjoy this in the comfort of your projector screen.
Yeah.
So we definitely excited with this venture we've taken, and it can only work because I think we tell our stories best.
How long has this been in this must have been in the pipeline for a while, right?
For some time.
Yeah. Because it takes time to develop apps and to build platforms. Are you going to have a set-top box?
Definitely. No, we don't need set-top box.
App-based. It's web-based.
It's just like Netflix.
Just like Netflix,
You don't need a set-top box.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatsoever.
Yeah.
You don't. But the content that's in there, I am happy to say Netflix has no challenge on us. Because you can get some of the Netflix stuff, via box office. You can get some. We're going the unconventional route.
Yeah.
One of the biggest shows I can start hinting to you right now that we're shooting is around this two big taxi owners in the country who, in their communities, the cops consult them before they can even arrest if there's a crime. They are the one who are ruling in those communities. And those are the kind of stuff that excites me. Mm. And we're just showing so much of the content in this country that we take for granted. Mm. And as we're putting out there. Mm. I've got this show that I'm shooting around traditional food. And the way we're telling that story is out of this world.
Yeah.
So the world is ready to consume African content. We must package it ready for the world.
And reselling the content as well to other providers internationally?
1,000%. There's a festival I'm attending. I've been invited in Cannes. All the on your Netflix is there, your big Amazons. It's held every May, and I'll be attending that as probably the first partner to them out of Africa. So I'm excited because I'll be presenting at the conference as well to say this is what we've created and this is where we are. I have distributors who are buying the content while we're still creating it. So, Duncan, it's important that we take our craft serious and understand that some of these great stories that have never been told do have commercial interest in other parts of the world. We can't keep telling the Mandela story and think that's the only time you're going to be on Blockbuster or cinemas worldwide.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to the launch of THD. It sounds very exciting indeed.
You'll be there. Your invitation is in your inbox.
If you're inviting me, I'll be there.
your invitation is in the inbox. How can we do it without, you know, the leading tech guru in the country? It's impossible.
Flattery will get you everywhere.
Come on.
You know, before I know I've taken a lot of your time already, yeah. Thibaut, but before we finish up, maybe something a little more lighthearted. And you've recently launched your own branded wine, and
correct.
You're involved, yes, in a gin venture.
Yes. Very excited. We're launching the platform same day. I've never done this in my life where two big investments have gone into business and you launch them simultaneously. But we're launching 48 Gin, which is handcrafted gin from Stellenbosch. And I partnered with a gentleman called Ross Carlo, who I feel, I know he's probably one of the best wines and spirit merchants. He understands the business so well. And we sat around the table and said, listen, I love gin. And for a year, we were supposed to do it last year. For a year, we kept on going back and forth because we needed to get the right distiller. And what makes this gin quite distinct from everybody is that it's made out of rose hips. And rose hips gives more potency to the flavor when you produce a rose gin. And some hibiscus, and we've added some nice pepper into it to give it a good sting. So we have been back and forth saying, this is not the taste, it's not the one. And recently on my trip from Cape Town last week, we finally got the recipe right. So we are in production as we speak. We're going to put out a couple of cases out on the market. We're going to put a couple of cases, probably 10,000 overseas and 20 locally. The design, I remember sitting in the room with these creatives in Cape Town, and this guy kept on just playing with the number 48. And when we finally got it, it never felt so good to say, here is a brand done by South Africans, going out to the world as the first black-owned gin, to say we are post-Mandela, post-94, we're getting it right in the wines and spirits field. Mm-hmm. We're getting it right so well that the issue, for me, skills transfer is important. When you can sit around winemakers who have been privileged for hundreds of years to be in the wine lineage, to say, let's bring partners who we're going to transfer our skills and allow them to own their brands. And I love going in that space because people are scared to put their own brand on a product. We have celebrities that call themselves influencers, but they're scared to put their own brand on a product. They'll rather get an endorsement. And that's great. It's a safe route. But I'm not going to sign with Coca-Cola if I can make my own. Mm-hmm. I just believe that way. Because somebody conceptualized Coca-Cola in the room and it's a success today. If you're not going to invest in your craft and put money into it, you can't consider yourself as an innovator or influencer. So we're doing that with Touch Reserve Wines as well. We're putting a beautiful Chenin Blanc. We got a beautiful Shiraz Pinot and a Cape Blend that's already out on the market. If you ever come across a all-black bottle with a piano outside, that's the Touch Reserve bottle. Mm-hmm. If you ever come across a matte black bottle of gin with gold embossed print, that is our 48 gin. And I hope anybody who goes and drinks this gin understand, or anybody who drinks this wine, that you're drinking a product of a young boy who was raised in a four-room house and never had a peach tree or a grape tree. And today we're making fine grapes. So enjoy it, indulge, and feel free to give me your comments.
I'm sure you will have some samplers at the launch of THD.
Hello. Yes, indeed.
So I will have to sample your wares there.
Thank you.
Definitely. Thibaut Touch, yes, is founder of Touch Touch HD.
Yes,
and THD, soon to be launched. Thank you for talking to Tech Central today. I really enjoyed this discussion.
Thanks to you, Duncan, and look forward to subscribing to your next podcast.